Blog Talk Radio.
Shank, and Joan Adams and I host this show. Our guest this evening is Mary McManus, also known as Graceful Lady. She is a beautiful and graceful soul who just happens to be one of our favorite people. Show flow and poetry is the energy behind what is happening here this evening. Joining me now is Joan Adams. Hello, dear Joan.
Hello, Kate. And we have no static. Isn't that wonderful? And no echo.
I know. We just experienced that, didn't we? A lot of echoing at the last show. Hello, dear Mary.
Hello, Kate. Hello, Joan. Hello, listeners.
Mary.
How are you all this evening?
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's just great to have you on the show.
Oh, I just think you're smiling.
We'll just sit here and smile for an hour.
That would be nice. We can do that.
Well, we'll do that as well, won't we? Yeah.
We will.
So we do have a lot to talk about, but we have no idea where to start. Let's see. Your poetry book, let's start there.
Okay. Do you want to start with Set Sail?
Tell us about Set Sail, yes.
Okay. I'll start my first poetry book, New World Greetings, Inspirational Poetry and Musings for a New World. I wrote that in 5 months. It just absolutely poured out of me. And then, as soon as I finished that book, I started writing more poetry, and I realized that they were all connected. They had this amazing nautical theme. And so it became the sequel, and it's called Set Sail for a New World, Healing a Life Through the Gift of Poetry. And it's different from the first book in that I go into the pain that I experience. The first book it's delightful, and it's more about the transformation and just about my awakening and seeing the world around me unfolding for the first time, just seeing the world through new eyes. And this book, really, Set Sail for a New World focuses on the pain and the emergence from the pain.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's really something that people, you know, need to kind of settle into, because pain is something where people might just hang out with the pain and never evolve out of that.
That's
but
right.
Yeah.
And you know, I did for years. And you get so used to living in a state of pain that you don't realize there's an alternative.
Mm-hmm.
And pain becomes just a part of life. And you know, I mean, we all live with aches and pains, and, you know, that's what I'm talking about for me. And I think for so many, Kate and Joan, is the spiritual pain. The spiritual pain that comes with not being aware of who we are, the spiritual pain of being alone and separate, feeling different, that's the kind of spiritual pain that I needed to heal and emerge from to become aware and awake.
Mm-hmm. That's really powerful. And tell our audience what other kinds of pain that you, if we want to talk about diagnosis. I know that we were talking about not touching on diagnosis, but I think your diagnosis might be appropriate for this conversation.
Well, you know what's so funny? I went back. If you go to Kate's prayer blog, which is www.praytoheal.com, you can see the dialogue we had today about diagnoses. And what I did was I went back and I looked on my profiles that I have in social media, and I changed them so that it's not that I am a polio and post-polio survivor. No, it's that after the diagnosis of post-polio syndrome, I had an awakening and a transformation. So I shifted the emphasis.
Ooh.
Love that. Love
wonderful.
That. It's more powerful, isn't it?
It is, Kate and Joan. It is so incredibly powerful. So when I was 5, I contracted paralytic polio in one of the last polio epidemics. And polio, if there are any young listeners out there who might not be aware of what polio is, it's a disease that affects the neuromuscular system. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, our president, had it. Alan Alda, Jack Nicklaus, Dinah Shore, Itzhak Perlman, the violinist, many, many, many famous people have had it. Wilma Rudolph, who went on to be an Olympic gold medalist and is one of my heroes. So when I was 5, I had paralytic polio. And then at the age of 53, my body shut down with something called post-polio syndrome. And so I had difficulty swallowing, breathing, walking, had tremors, chronic pain, chronic fatigue. And out of that life-altering diagnosis, and, you know, it could have been, it just took the form of post-polio in my body because I had polio as a kid, but, you know, for some people it takes on cancer, it takes on, you know, many different faces. And as you said, Kate and Joan, the diagnosis isn't important. It's what do we do with it?
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened was in February of 2007, after being diagnosed with post-polio syndrome and being told I had to quit my full-time job as a social worker and make all these lifestyle changes, while my body was literally immobilized, my spirit said, ha-ha, now's my time. I can fly because this fool isn't running around taking care of the world. And I say that with a lot of love for myself. And
yes.
I had to sit, and I had to get still, and I had to look within, and I had to reconnect to God, Goddess, Source, Divine Mind, whatever you want to call it, and outpoured poetry.
Oh, wow. That's great. And the poetry is what kind of transported you to the spiritual realm.
Yes. Yes. It was when I was 5, my physical therapist read Dr. Seuss to me.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very wise. She was wise before her years. She knew that I needed to be transported to another place in order to get through the grueling physical therapy. And she used Dr. Seuss. And so I took pen to paper, not knowing that why I was taking pen to paper. I just had this urge to create and started writing. And this second book is so powerful because it starts out with the tempest and the storms and Noah's Ark and then ends up with the last poem, which is Dare to Dream.
Which is, Dear Lord, Teach Me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dare to Dream.
Dare to dream.
I'm sorry. I'm having trouble hearing tonight.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dare to dream.
Dare to dream. Okay.
Wonderful.
It is wonderful.
Are you familiar with John Dillbeck?
You familiar with John Dillbeck? John's entire theme is dare to dream. You know, make your dreams come true. Love his stuff.
Is he a poet, Joan?
No, he's not a poet. He writes online. He writes on Squidoo, and he also has a blog. I'll find those links in just a few minutes.
Oh, okay.
But,
that would be great.
But, yeah,
on Facebook.
Dare to Dream Live Your Dreams. I'm doing an interview with him right now, and but his, you know, it's, we were talking last night about dreams. That's what got me there. But yes, Live Your Dream. Live Your Dream. That's his thing. Wonderful human being and a good writer too. But yes, we have to live those dreams. Mm-hmm. Indeed, that's why we have them.
And the power of imagination, that's what was so striking to me with the poetry,
mm-hmm.
was that even though I was in a leg brace and I was using a cane and at times a wheelchair, in my mind's eye, I could go wherever I wanted. I could do whatever I wanted. And the first poem that I wrote was called Running the Race, and never expected to actually run a race, but as your listeners who may have heard me before and our new listeners, I ran the Boston Marathon last year.
I love that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, running a race has also become a wonderful metaphor in my life, and running at your own pace and keeping your own pace and all the wonderful metaphors for that go with running and with the journey. But in Set Sail, there are all these, you know, nautical images, and God is the beacon, the lighthouse. And would you like me to select one and read it? Or, Kate, you have my book. Are there any that you would like me to read?
Why don't you just open it up and where it falls?
Oh, I love that.
Okay. All right. So this is a great one. Well, they're all great. I love them all. They're all my babies.
Yes.
This is called Leave the Old World Behind. Mm-hmm. For years and years, I lived behind a wall of crushing pain. Chest wall heaving, shallow breaths. At times, I felt insane. Swirling thoughts of victim from life's battery energy drained. The moments of my life slipped by. Fewer years of life remained. This old world was familiar, oddly comfortable and safe. Gray and dull with little light, with chains on skin did chafe. Feeling trapped and shutting out the world outside my door, vowing that the walls should stay, protect me evermore. Although there was no passion, no love, no laughter brought, I didn't have to face the pain that all the past had wrought. For staying trapped inside myself, no contrast to take hold, forgetting who my master is, a slave my life was sold. Drowning in the anger, toxic poison to my soul, perpetuating human lies with no way to feel whole. Dare to cleanse the wounds inside and trust the one divine. Groping, hoping, holding breath and waiting for a sign. Yet all those years I held the key deep inside my womb. No need to live my life alone inside my self-built tomb. Unlock myself, take off these chains that I had put on me. In truth, no one can lock me up. This truth I had to see. Peering into darkness, a ray of hope and light, God's lighthouse beckoned to me. A healing was in sight. To unbuild brick and mortar, a flood of tears the force. To sail with God and free my soul with love straight from the source.
Mm.
Within my heart, a joy leaps up. Explorer's lamp was lit. Excitement, fear, a restlessness were chomping at the bit. And thoughts of being victim with fear and doubt and dread are now replaced with thoughts of life and light and love instead.
Mm.
Wow.
So did you just suddenly start to write this poetry one day, or did it just come through you one time and you just couldn't ever stop, you know, just kept going? Is that the way it works?
Yeah. I was just amazed, and I had to have pen and paper with me at all times. And I'd wake up in the morning, and poems would be there. And I'd be waiting for I went through a rehab hospital here, outpatient. And while I was waiting, I had to have pen and paper, and a poem would come. And then I was still working at the VA, and in between patients, whereas before I used to Kate, you can appreciate this. I had to get my progress notes in and the computer and make sure all my I's were dotted and all my T's were crossed. And so instead of doing that, because I knew I was going to be leaving, I would sit and I would take care of myself and I would do my stretching and I would write poetry, and it just all started. It was like a cap had been lifted off my soul, and it just started pouring out of me. And I, after I wrote the two books, I thought, okay, well, I'm done. And no, it doesn't work that way. I mean, it's, I guess in a way it's like your prayer block, Kate, you know, that you do 360 days of blogging, but you know it's going to go on. And
Yeah.
Well, it takes on, something like that takes on a life of its own.
Yes. Yep.
You know, it's
absolutely.
Like it's out of, it's not, has nothing, you're not in control of it.
No, and I'm so glad. I mean, the beauty of it is that, and I, not only do I write the inspirational poetry, but I write poetry for every occasion, for birthdays, for anniversaries, for in memoriam, and it just all brings me so much joy. I just get transported to this other place. And it has had the most powerful healing effect on me. And sure, do I still have symptoms of post-polio? Yeah, I live with it every day, but do I manage it? Absolutely. And do I transcend it? You give me a pen and paper, and you give me, you know, you put me by the ocean, and the poems will flow. Or if there is somebody who's, I just did a poem for a dad whose daughter is getting married, and I did it as the toast for his from him to his daughter.
Oh, that's sweet.
And it's just been this. I mean, I worked as a social worker at the VA of all places. I mean, how much more opposite can you get of living in this, in being awakened and living in a spiritual world? Although I always joke, Kate, and I said, boy, if I would have been reading your prayer blog when I worked at the VA, I probably would have stayed, because I would have had many different tools. But you know what I mean? I mean, it's just, it's so, for lack of a better word, secular. And so,
well,
now I'm just in this totally different space.
Yes. What is your office like? Were you
my office here in the house?
Yeah.
It is, it's a small room, but it's, everything is in its place, so we keep it very uncluttered. And it overlooks this beautiful field. There's, it's called the Little Field. And it over, so my seat faces the window. And there's a tree right outside where I have witnessed just so much beauty of nature that's inspired many poems. And then I look out onto the little field where there are all these trees and where I get to see the light of day and the light through the seasons. It's just beautiful. And I can also see the, down the street is a school, so I can hear the laughter of the kids at recess. And it's just amazing. And then I also have an office on my lawn when the weather's good. I just take out my, all my stuff, and I put on my sunblock, and I sit in God's glorious sunshine and create on the lawn as well.
Do you actually write out hand, do you do it longhand, or do you type it immediately onto a computer?
No, I do it longhand first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's how I do the prayer block, too. I never type it out first. Unless I'm copying and pasting a little bit, yeah. But mostly just sit down at night and write, or early morning, and just write longhand.
But you're pretty much letting it come to you, right, Kate?
Yeah, yes. Usually there's some sort of experience, you know, that happened that day, or we're working on certain things around here that make me, or I'm reading something. That's always a good one.
Yeah. I think the most And I've only done this, the kind of automatic writing that I see you both do a few times in my life. But at one point, I was sitting in a little church we belonged to at the time, and the whole, I understood everything that was going on in that church. It was just the strangest feeling. It had nothing to do with me, which I'm sure you both understand. And I came home and sat in front of the computer and just threw out the most beautiful plan for that church. I mean, it wasn't mine. You know, it just plain wasn't mine, because it just went through me. And you know, I think we've talked about that before, but it was a powerful experience for me. And the little church at the time didn't think so much of it, but and I presented it. You know, I would, but. I was fascinated with it, because they weren't original thoughts of mine. It came through me.
Wow.
It literally was bigger than I was. I haven't had that experience but few times in my life. But I think both of you do.
It's phenomenal to experience it. And, you know, I mean, it's been 3 years now, and just now is it, am I really grasping that it is channeling, that it is, it goes with my soul and it's coming from my heart, but it's also coming from God through me.
Yeah.
It doesn't originate in me, and it's truly a gift, and I embrace it. And this past Sunday we have a dear friend who's brother has tuberous sclerosis, and he's one of the oldest living individuals who survived this. And part of the reason that he survived it, I believe, is he's surrounded with love, prayer, and he's also a miracle, and he's just such a gift in everyone's life. And when his brother said he was doing a fundraiser for him, I said, well, then I have to write a poem to celebrate him. And, you know, I think too often we wait for somebody's birthday, or we wait for somebody to make their transition to celebrate them. And as it turned out, Jason's birthday had been the week before, but still I wanted to celebrate him. And so his brother sent me some ideas, and then I sat down, and it just, again, I mean, I'm holding the pen, mm-hmm. but it's just this feeling of divinity and just that pure love pouring through me, and just this connectedness. And people have said, you got inside my head, how did you do that? And I said, well, it's an intuitive gift. It's nothing that I am doing. It's not I in ego that I do this. It's I as spirit do this.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it is a gift.
Mm-hmm. It is. And I'm so grateful for it.
And a very
so
humbling one. Yeah.
Yes.
A what?
Mm-hmm. Very humbling.
Yeah.
It's very humbling.
Yeah.
Right that way. Yeah. It's not an ego thing at all. It's a wow. How did that happen?
Yeah.
And acceptance and appreciation of that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It just brings you closer to the elements and to the move, somehow the rhythms of life.
Mhm, mhm. Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I'm going to read The Light on the Lawn. And what's interesting is that we had actually, the three of us had talked about this in an email. My dad took his own life on August 1st, back in 1971. And so I always hated fall. I mean, it was just like, I hated it. I hated the change of seasons. I hated fall. I hated winter. I didn't see anything wonderful or magical or mystical about it. This was back then, to be very blunt, it sucked. And and also, you know, with polio and post-polio, there is my thermostat, and I'm working on this, and I believe that, you know, over time that this too can be healed if it's meant to be, if it's for my highest good. But with the thermostat, I can get very, very hot. Even when it's warm, like I'll sort of overheat very quickly, or if it's cold, I'll shiver and I won't have the ability to tolerate the cold. Well, I still have the cold intolerance, but I now have the ability to go out and enjoy winter and enjoy all the seasons because I learned how to dress. And I learned, you know, by the way, this is a great tip if anybody does have issues with getting cold, really cold, silk. There's a winter silk. And, So you can, I found out when I was training for the marathon in the freezing cold that you can layer with garments that are made of silk, winter silk.
Oh.
And it makes it much more tolerable. And a lot of the wicking materials that are used for running clothes are also just fabulous for keeping you warm in the winter, and then also keeping you cooler with that the mesh. So these are all things I learned that I didn't know about. But this is called the light on the lawn. And I got up one morning, this is probably a couple of years ago, and I looked out, and it was one of those late summer warm days. Actually, no, it was the first day of fall, and it was still warm. And you can tell, and Kate, I love your descriptions in the prayer blog about how you describe when the days are getting shorter and the gifts that are involved in that. So this is my poem, The Light on the Lawn, which talks about the changing seasons. From my bedroom window on this first day of fall, spotlight on the flower bed, nature's wake-up call. The air still smells like summer, the sun rays shining hot, but fall apparent when the sun moved quickly from that spot. And though the days are shorter, they're really not, you know. The falling leaves dance round me, inviting me to grow. Release the hold on summer, perfection found in youth. Embrace the years and moments to seek and hold the truth. I cherish change of seasons, the hope inside the seed, the quiet hibernation to surrender every need. To huddle close, to feel the warmth, the fire burning bright, the stars appear and celebrate the longer days of night. Though I see the trees are dying, there's no need to weep. Trees are resting gently. Prepare for winter sleep. The long dark days of winter may weigh heavy on my heart, but even in the darkness, from God's love I'll never part. The branches may be threadbare, their riches yet unseen. They hold all the mystery, protecting fragile green. Snowflakes gently falling, with silence touch the ground. Blanketing the dirt and soot, God can now surround. Put on the cloak of winter with its hope and touch of grace. Make angels in the fallen snow to consecrate this place. Surrender to the seasons, the dark and then the light. Feel the heartbeat of God's rhythms pass through day and night. Reflect within and find myself to feel God's loving source. Feel God's radiant source of love, magnificent glowing force. Dispel the thoughts of grayness, the darkness and the fear. The winter's night upon the soul, cold breath so fresh and clear.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Yeah,
thank you.
I can really relate to that. I'll never forget when my father died in December of 2000, the long winter nights after that, I really tuned into them. And there's just nothing more alive than a really long, dark night where you can write and read and meditate. And I almost felt sad that spring came that year.
Wow.
Because, it was really interesting. But usually you're really excited when spring comes. That was really one of my only experiences of sort of thinking, oh, no.
Because you were
but
really
I have
excited.
To admit, I love the long winter nights, too. I love
that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I like the balance. I like having a little bit of both. I enjoy the long winter nights, and then I'm glad when springtime comes.
Yeah, I am now, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I wrote several poems around snow. And as it turned out, when I was writing, as I was writing this, it was one of the most snowy New England winters we had in a long time. And ordinarily, that would have really depressed me because fear had gripped my soul. And that was the other thing with polio. My particular doctor growing up, he was wonderful. And he actually commented years later about post-polio syndrome and said, he wrote an editorial for the New York Times and said that we have to be very careful to not turn polio survivors into victims again.
Oh. Ooh. He was ahead of his time.
He was. Dr. Moskowitz. Well, I Googled him after being diagnosed with post-polio to see if he were still among us, but he's an angel. But he'd written that editorial. And with post-polio, you know, the message is that if you fall and if you break a hip, then your recovery is complicated because of the post-polio and whatnot. And, you know, one of my passions and one of my purpose in being able to have run the Boston Marathon, and I'm still running, and I'm doing 5 and 10K road races, and I'm doing a 6-day-a-week health and fitness regimen. And part of my, I believe, part of the purpose in all of this is to send a message that when we're given a diagnosis, we cannot choose fear. Mm-hmm. We must choose love. We must choose self-love, and we must be connected to God and to listen to our bodies. Now, some people may, you know, they're, for whatever reason, their path may be that, you know, they do whatever they do inside their bodies, and that's as long as they are in a state of acceptance and love and peace, then that's fine. I mean, we're all different and we all have different paths. But for me, what I want the medical community to hear loud and clear is that, you know, please don't tell us about what we shouldn't do or, you know, to live in fear, but to just go out and embrace life. And, I mean, everybody has to take precautions. You know, when you're walking on a slippery sidewalk, you know, you put down your ice melt and you walk carefully and whatnot. But when you live in that fear, then you really invite those things to happen. So I'm so grateful for the team that I had at Spalding, and I'm so grateful that I was able to do what they recommended initially, but then to also listen to what my body was saying and to, you know, really go out there and embrace life in its fullness and to not let the messages of fear or the, you know, I mean, if we went through my problem list in my medical chart, you would think I should be, you know, 6 feet under by now. But I just don't let that define who I am or define my life.
But that's something you've done inside.
Exactly, Joan. Exactly.
It really is. We had lunch today with my husband's brother and his wife, who is doing chemo. And she's just amazing. She is just amazing. I said, well, how are you doing? And she said, well, you know, I cut the grass last week. Well, they live on this huge property. So she meant she'd been out riding on the tractor cutting grass. And, you know, she just doesn't buy the whole victim thing. You know, but she has done that. And I asked her about that. And I said, you know, because she's been that way this whole time. And she has been on this little journey for 6 months or so. And she said, my mom's like that. You know, she said, mom just had whatever bypass and this and that and the other, and said, you know, nothing stops her and nothing stops me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's very internal. That's, I wish there was a pill that you could give that to people, but you can't.
Yes. Yes.
You have to find that for yourself somehow. And she has that deep inside of her, like you do. I got tickled at myself last week. I'm going to tell a tale on me. But I had not felt well. And somebody said something about, are you feeling better, you look better, or something. And I said, you know, in my head, I heard me say, I'll feel bad as long as I want to, thank you. You know? Right?
Yeah.
Wake up call. This is my little party, and I'll play in it as long as I please. Leave me alone. And we all do it. We just don't all admit it. But, you know, but there is a real mindset to that whole healing thing. I believe that with everything in me. And watch people like Chris and like you who just say, well, yeah, this is the way it is, but in the meantime, I'm going to have some fun, so, you know, what are we going to do today, you know?
Well, you know, last 2 weeks ago, my husband ran the Falmouth Road Race, and he ran for Ms. Wheelchair Massachusetts Foundation, which is, you talk about people who will not let life get them down or become victims. The founder of it, her name's Laura Labden, and she's on Facebook, and she nearly died in a car crash, and she is quadriplegic, but, you know, she's the executive director of an art studio. She founded the Ms. Wheelchair Massachusetts Foundation. She's an advocate. She has her own advocacy business. I mean, this woman is just amazing, just amazing. So 2 weeks ago, my husband ran the Falmouth Road Race, and we raised enough money that we could have had two numbers and they had an extra number, but I knew that I wasn't going to put myself, it's a very fast race, they have, 10,000 runners, the start of the course is very brutal, there are a lot of hills, and I said, you know, I'm going to enjoy being a spectator, I'm not going to, you know, be on the pity pot. There was, Joan, like you, there was a little part of me that said, you know, wow, I want to run the Falmouth Road Race, but that didn't last long. I said, well, I'm just going to embrace being here, and also when my husband runs by himself, he can set his own pace and just feel really good about what he's doing, and that's so important for him because he runs with me, he's run with me in so many races. But anyway, so we had, quote-unquote, forgotten our beach chairs at the hotel where we stayed, so we just had to make a day trip back, and my husband said, well, why don't we do our training run on Saturday, because Sunday we had this fundraiser for my friend. And I said, okay. And what we did was we ran the route of the Falmouth Road Race. We did 3 miles out and 3 miles back. And it was so amazing because I felt as though I had run the Falmouth Road Race. And, you know, I was pretending that, you know, the crowds were there and they were cheering us on. And you would have thought that I actually had run the race. And now I don't have to, and he can run it next year by himself. And, you know, and I mean, it's this beautiful shore route and everything. And but see, that's the power of play and imagination. And that's something that I did not have in my life before I was, you know, hit over the head with post-polio syndrome. I didn't know what playing was. And, you know, it's funny, my cousins used to say to me growing up, you're so serious all the time. Don't you ever play?
Oh, I can't imagine you being serious all the time.
I was. Oh, my gosh. I was so serious. I studied all the time. That was my saving grace, was my intellect. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. I had no sense of fun whatsoever. I didn't know how to have fun. My parents didn't. Well, they, God bless them. I mean, my dad drank, but he didn't have fun when he drank. And my mom was addicted to pain medication. And they didn't know how to have fun. And, I mean, I played bridge. I went bowling. And I would have some fun doing bowling. But, you know, Joan, when you said about it being an internal state, I didn't have an internal state of joy. I didn't know joy. I didn't know happiness.
Wow. Okay. Ever.
Well, you had a pretty heavy childhood.
Yeah.
You know, with your illness. And you had to learn how to transcend all of that, or how, actually it just came on to you that you, it just sounds like you were blessed by a spiritual experience.
Yes. Yeah.
Well,
when
you
I
had,
was five.
As you you said you have this wonderful trainer, and this, you had some folks that were sending you some real positive stuff.
Oh, God, yes. Miss Holly, who I can see to this day, and I often wonder if she's an angel or if I'm sure she is, although you never know. I mean, it doesn't matter. Her spirit lives on, and she had this beautiful curly hair and just this great smile. And then in junior high, I had a teacher, Miss Dupre, Barbara Dupre, my French teacher, and God orchestrated it so that my study hall was her free period, and I was able to tell her a lot of what was going on in the household. But, you know, back then, they didn't have Department of Social Services. They didn't have Protective Services. It was very different. And, you know, I don't know. Did you watch the series Mad Men at all?
No.
It's very heavy, and it's dark, but my husband actually got so into it, and I said, well, I got to watch this with him and see what he's watching. And it's about that era that I grew up in, the 60s, and, you know, everyone had a cigarette, everyone had a, you know, scotch and water during the workday, and they're also alluding now to the sexual abuse with the mother and the daughter. And, you know, it was so prevalent during that time. And it wasn't talked about or anything, but I was blessed with Miss Dupre, and I didn't tell her everything. I told her about the alcoholism, and then she met with me after my dad suicided. She invited me into Manhattan. We lived in Westchester, just outside of the city, and she invited me into Manhattan to have lunch with her before I went off to college. I mean, as I look back on it, I left for college a month after my dad killed himself. The strength that was within me is just, I'm mm-hmm. still in awe of it. And it comes from God. I mean, that's mm-hmm. truly just being pulled forward by God's grace. And so Barbara met me at a restaurant in New York, and she gave me, as a going-away present, a sewing kit. And she told me that no matter how much in your life gets ripped apart, you can always put it back together.
Ooh.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's very symbolic. That's just amazing.
And, you know, I had that thing, I think probably until we moved into this house. I mean, and it just, the kit that you open and close, it had a hinge on it and stuff, and it eventually disintegrated and fell apart. But I had it probably up until about 14 years ago. Used all of the threads and everything, and always thought of her. And so that's the thing too. I mean, it's a miracle that I didn't shut down, and you know, and that I was able to open myself to the angels that came in my life, and now they're just pouring in at warp speed, and it's so much fun. I mean,
but the thing I'm so struck with right now, Mary, and you're right on it, is the impact that we have on children. And at 18, you're not a child, 17, but you were. You were a young woman, and this one teacher touched your soul.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think we realize how important that stuff is. I really don't.
No. You just forgot how you're touching people.
No.
Little children. Children especially.
Little children. Children do not forget anything. And if you look back in your childhood and you try to come up with the most positive thing that happened to you or the most negative, whatever it is, you're going to remember it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating to me that when we're parents, we don't have time to think about that, you know.
That's why God made grandparents, right?
That's why God said grandparents look back and go, okay, we want to be sure that we don't, you know. I don't know. I'm just fascinated with the whole thing about how we impact children pre-5, especially. But yeah, I mean, this lady touched your life. Now, I'm not negating what she did for you, but I'm saying for her, it was an act of love.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She did it as a piece of who she was. Mm-hmm. She did not realize she was touching you for a lifetime.
That's right. Oh, I just got goosebumps.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
I,
definitely.
There's so much of that that I really want to get words around it all because I think it's important.
Well, you'll love this. The other day, you know, we were making a commercial for the hospital.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
For its anniversary. And so I had to play the violin. And this little boy who was born in the hospital, he was a part of the whole thing. He just, he sidled up to me and he, you could tell, he wanted to play the violin. He was just watching. And everywhere I turned, there he was, and he followed me everywhere. And apparently, he just talked about me when we, you know, parted. And I think he's going to take up the violin. He's about 8 or 9.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, he's
wow.
a cute kid, you know. I thought he was adorable. But like you said, you just don't know. I took him under my wing, too. It wasn't like I ignored him or anything. We just had a great time. He was just really fun.
But you did not go to that planning to do that. It's kind of
no,
the point
I have no
I'm
idea.
Making. It happened
no,
out of who you are, like
mm-hmm.
like Mary's teacher. It was just a piece of who she was. She loved Mary, you know.
Yes.
I have something for you. I want you to remember this. I mean, that's beautiful. I
and
love
here
that.
We are. Gosh.
How many years later?
40 years. 40 years later.
Yes.
Yeah,
40 years later.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, that's wonderful. It is. It's just precious.
Love never fails, huh?
It never
that's
dies.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, never dies and never fails. Yeah. Yeah. And it does make you want to be more careful around the children. Like, what am I leaving with these kids? What are they going to remember about me?
Oh, that's so funny, Joe. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's true. You know, we just, but I have a teacher. She was a Sunday school teacher, actually, and she is living. And I have actually lived long enough to tell her this. She taught us a little song in Sunday school about what time I am afraid. And I cannot tell you how many times I have sung that little song. She does not even remember it. But to me, in my mind, it's Miss Jolly's song, you know. I sing Miss Jolly's song in my head if I'm frightened. And, yeah, she gave me that. She gave me that little song. As I say, she has no memory of it. She thinks it's wonderfully funny. And at 66 years old, here I am still remembering that little song I learned in grade school. That has held me, you know, that has comforted me. That's the word.
Mm-hmm.
It
yes.
The sewing kit comforted you.
Yes.
It gave you a concrete comfort.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what this also speaks to is that for anyone who's lived through the kind of experiences that I've lived through, and feels like a victim, it's so important to remember that you can transcend any experience and that there's if you look for it, you will find the love. There are always people there that are sent to you. There are always messages, signs, all of it, people to guide you along the way and to help you heal. And It's a matter of being open to it and to just opening the heart and opening the eyes and opening the soul to see it. And as I said, it was through my having to literally sit still because physically I couldn't run around. I couldn't do the things that I used to do. I couldn't do laundry. I couldn't do house cleaning. I didn't have the physical strength to do any of that. And so I had to sit and go inside. And my message is also, you know, don't wait for that to happen, people. You know, to begin practicing it now. Begin making it a part of your lives so that you don't have to, you know, have a catastrophic event to awaken. Just allow yourself to take the time to meditate and to be and to open up. You know, it's like I've used the analogy of a can opener to sort of, you know, open it up and see what's inside. And there's a lot of really great stuff. We all have wonderful gifts, and it's a matter of tapping in on them and not allowing the craziness and the chaos of the world to overshadow that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the time to be is such an important thing. And I know you've heard me say, our little grandson was in kindergarten, and they had time to be, which meant it was time to be quiet. But I love the phrase, you know, it's time to be, just to be still and to be quiet. And it's time we don't all take as much as we should, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah, we can use every moment as an awakening.
Mm-hmm. All day.
Yep.
Yeah.
And just become aware and conscious and playful.
And living
in the moment. Did you have siblings, Mary?
I have an older brother, and he, when we first got to BU, he was a junior. And when we first got to BU, I mean, he drove me up, and he was wonderful. He got the resident assistant involved, and I got to the counseling center, which was really very, very important. The person that I had was not the best, but that's okay. I mean, she was, you know, as I look back on it, she probably was the, I think if I would have had somebody who was, you know, like you, Kate, or you, Joan, I probably would have disintegrated. I probably needed somebody who was a little bit distant and cold in order to keep me glued together. So I believe that she was the person I was supposed to see at that time. My brother did the best that he could, and he was certainly dealing with his own devastation because he was away at school during the worst of my father's alcoholism, and, you know, we tried to tell him what was going on, and, you know, so it was more devastating for him because he hadn't seen the decline as I had. But now he's going to be 60 next year, and he has transformed, and he's going to take on a big hairy monster challenge, and I showed him my marathon medal, and I said, I dare you, and he was laughing, which was great. And so we went through a lot of rocky times together, in and out. We connected, then we wouldn't connect. But now we're both so blessed. He came up right before my daughter was leaving for Tennessee, and we had this miraculous brunch with him. It was just such joy, and he made dramatic lifestyle changes. And just decided that, you know, as he's going into his later years, he really wants to be healthy and whole. So, and my niece, his daughter, is getting married next year, which is, he's so excited about it. And so it's a good time. It's a good time in our relationship, and I'm so grateful.
Oh, that's great news.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So I don't know what his big hairy mammoth event is going to be, but we'll see. But he looks wonderful. I think he's probably lost over 50 pounds, and he's been doing spinning, and he's getting more of a balance in his life, which is just wonderful.
But as little children, y'all were not children together in the home, basically. What I'm thinking about is fun. But you didn't, as little children, you didn't have fun together because you weren't little children together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, for the first, once it's 5 to 8, I was dealing with just trying to walk again. And then at 8, our dad started drinking. And I was the focus. I was more the focus than Paul was. Paul had asthma. He, so we didn't, you know, between the conditions, and it was very limiting. But now, here we are at, I'll be 57, and he's going to be 60, and see, it's what you said in the prayer blog about aging. This is the best time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. Mm-hmm. No doubt. This is what we work so hard for and don't even know we're doing it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
To get to the point.
And
I can remember what a wonderful relief it was to me to hit, I guess, my 50s and realize how little I cared about what everybody thought. Never have cared a whole lot, but all of a sudden at 50, it just kind of all went away. Okay, you can now be a rebel the way you want to, so whatever. But very liberating to be old, yes.
It is. It really is. And, you know, I'm not a member of the, what is it, the Red Hat Society, or when I'm an old lady, I'll wear purple or whatever. I mean, this is so much bigger than all of that, and it's amazing. And I saw Steve commented on the 23rd Psalm in the chat room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this, I'm going to, oh, my gosh, is it really? No. It's like we have, what, 4 minutes left?
Yeah.
Well, if you want to read something,
read.
Okay. This is called Unloose the Ties That Bind, and thinking of the 23rd Psalm always makes me think of lambs and everything because, you know, carrying the lamb. But Unloose the Ties That Bind. I'm no longer a lamb tied for the slaughter. Unloose the ties that bind. I am a lamb carried gently by you when my footing I cannot find. I am a sheep, a part of the flock, guided when I go astray. I am also the shepherd filled with your love, steps secured on journey's way. I give thanks for the noise that once filled my head. I choose peace and quiet, joy, hope, no more dread. The table, the feast, no sacrificial one. I'm laughing and free in the noonday sun. Come take my hand, let's both take a chance, hear all of life's music to sing and to dance. We'll pray and we'll ponder, share my journey with you. We'll set sail for a new world before we are through.
Mm.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Mm.
Thank you.
You do have a gift, my dear friend.
That's right.
Thank you. And Joan, my first book is already recorded with the Talking Book Library.
Oh, wow.
And
right.
Starting in a couple of weeks, I'm going to record my second book. So they'll both be available for the visually impaired through the Talking Book Library, Library of Congress Talking Books.
Wonderful. Are you recording that yourself? You're doing your own reading?
I'm doing my own reading, yeah. The first one I did my own reading, and this one I'll do my own reading, because they said nobody could do the poems justice like I could.
Well, I think that's true.
I do, too.
And Whitey would love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know that he would listen to poetry, but it might be time to introduce him. You're about to be, I'm supposed to be looking up a book for him tonight. But that's wonderful. I thought about it, volunteering to do some of that reading, even with my gravelly old voice.
Oh, Joan, it would be wonderful.
Yeah, I think it'd be neat to do some, you know, some stuff, and I need to make some phone calls to get that going because, I'd just like to do it, but. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you'd like to do it, too.
Good stuff.
You have a great voice. I love it. Great.
And you could do all the different characters and everything. And you would do such a great reading, though, with the inflection and then, oh, yeah, that would be great.
I would rather hear my sister do them, but and that's why it reminded me of fun. I mean, you know, we have such a fun time.
Fun.
But, you know, that's the sibling thing. Such a big deal in my life. But, yeah. And we are pushed on minutes. You are always an inspiration, Mary. Do let me tell you that. You're good for my soul.
Thank you.
Mine too. I just love it.
It's just joy. Pure joy to talk to you.
Yes. That was the fastest hour in the world.
It always is.
Timeless. Yeah.
Timeless, yes. timeless.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let me just put in a plug. If anybody wants to get my books of inspirational poetry, go to www.newworldgreetings.com. And if you want to read more about my inspirational journey, it's marymcmanus.com.
Wonderful.
That would just, okay, I'll put that in because they can get your books there, can't they?
On newworldgreetings.com, yeah.
And marymcmanus.com.
Yeah, we have to get the PayPal up on there.
And follow you on Facebook and find you on, are you also on Twitter? You are, aren't you?
I am, yeah. I don't tweet as much, but I do check my account. And then sometimes the spirit just moves me to, you know, send things out into Twitter land, Twitterverse, so I do that. And just sort of see, you know, wherever I'm supposed to be putting my messages.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you again. And
thank you.
I'm going to be playing the C.D. Jensen, Klaus C. Jensen song, music for mother and child. Love to you. Love to you.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
God bless. Love you. Hugs.
God bless you.